This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. In today's program, Mexico contemplates the legalization of drugs during an address to the United Nations General Assembly, and President Ahmadinejad of Iran delivers his valedictory. This is 5 o'clock shadow, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York. This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York. In yesterday's edition of 5 o'clock shadow, we heard Thiago Barroso's report on victims of the drug war in Mexico who recently gathered at the Riverside Church in New York City to ask for the end of a war that's killed over 60,000 people in the past 6 years, most of those civilians. Today, Felipe Calderon, the president of Mexico and the man behind the aggressive U.S.-supported crackdown, addressed the United Nations General Assembly and called on the U.N. to lead a global debate. He detailed the overview of how drugs, guns, and money have created a global humanitarian crisis. Calderon also contemplated a new discussion at the United Nations leading to a less prohibitionist environment and the potential eventual legalization of drugs.
And now the fourth challenge. And here, I would like to have your attention because I'm going to speak about the topic and the problem that is claiming more the most violent deaths around the world, the problem that is causing the deaths of thousands of young people, particularly in our beloved Latin America and Caribbean. The fourth challenge is transnational organized crime, which is decimating thousands of young people, and which is one of the most serious global threats of our time. These criminal organizations that operate networks around huge illegal flows, not only of drugs, but also illegal flows of weapons, money, illegal flows of the unacceptable human trafficking. To control their markets, their supply and demand, and also to earn the income taken from honest citizens where they live, they use violence. And under this logic, they are trying to control territories and to co-opt governments. They are challenging the force of the state. They are taking advantage of the weakness or the clear institutional corruption to be able to act with impunity and to impose their power. They become entrenched in communities, and there they control everything they can. They take money from honest people for their work. They extort businessmen and farmers, and they are involved in crimes such as extortion, theft, and kidnapping. Organized crime, ladies and gentlemen, is one of the main causes of death today. It's one of the main causes of violence which the United Nations has an obligation to fight. And it's one of the greatest threats for democracy in the 21st century. Mexico has suffered the consequences of this, in which are also the consequences, unfortunately, of years of inertia, while this crime expanded. And that is why protecting families, protecting Mexicans, protecting people from crime has been for my government not only a legal, constitutional imperative, but also an ethical and political imperative, an absolute imperative. And we have fought decisively strongly and with courage we have fought this threat, this inadmissible threat to our people. And we have done this convinced that our main duty as governors is to protect families. At the same time, we have fostered a truly historic transformation in institutions in charge of enforcing the law, because we are developing new and better police and judicial powers in the fight for security. We require new and better capabilities that are able to defend liberty and legality. However, we regret the fact that this effort is not seen equally in countries that should do it. And I would like to explicitly regret the fact before you, for example, that the diplomatic conference which took place here in July, last July, did not reach any agreement when it came to the adoption of the Arms Trade Treaty. And this would have laid the basis to control the irresponsible sale of powerful weapons to transnational organized criminal groups. You know that my government in the last 6 years, we have decommissioned more than 150,000 weapons. We have taken them from criminals, 150,000 weapons. And that is why Mexico was pushing for a treaty that would limit or at least ban or regulate the transfer of conventional weapons, because we know that there's a risk that these arms could end up, that they don't go to the hands of good citizens who want to defend their fatherland. They end up in the hands of criminals. That's why this business exists. To commit horrible and unprecedented violations of international law. Now, arms trafficking is only one aspect of a very complex problem. Today, we, ladies and gentlemen, we have to acknowledge an undeniable truth. And that is that illegal drug consumption in many developed countries is killing thousands and thousands of young people in production and transit countries. It is creating violence which our people don't deserve. Drug-consuming countries have not made progress, or at least have not made enough progress when it comes to reducing consumption. And here there is much work to be done in terms of reducing the demand and preventing addiction. We need to step up our efforts to deal with this public health problem. Preventive policies which fight addiction, and media and information campaigns which would make young people around the world understand that addiction, drug addiction, is the new slavery of the 21st century. It is a heavy chain that ties down the adolescent. But alongside this, we need to recall, ladies and gentlemen, that the greater power of criminal organizations, where does it come from? Well, it comes from the billions of dollars in economic resources with which they finance themselves, resources which are flowing to them from the main drug consumption countries. And if we don't stop this mountain of funds, if we don't stop the flow of money that the consumers pay, organized crime will continue to undermine peace and will continue to challenge entire societies and governments. And that is why here in this lofty assembly, I would like to say clearly that the time has come for consuming countries to honestly and sincerely assess if they have the will and the ability to do so They must try to reduce drug consumption significantly and substantially. Otherwise, if they cannot reduce this consumption, they must urgently take strong action to at least reduce the exorbitant flows of currency that are ending up in the hands of criminal organizations. I know that thus far we have followed a well-intentioned approach. The approach was be to try to keep drugs out of the hands of young people through a legal fight against the supply of drugs. But there's a fundamental problem to this. It leads to a black market, and the enormous earnings which have been prompted by prohibition, and which comes from the black market, this has increased the ambition of criminals, and it's increased further the massive flow of resources towards their organized crime. This has increased the ambition of criminals, and it's increased further the massive flow of resources towards their organizations. And this allows them to create powerful networks and gives them an almost unlimited ability to corrupt. They're capable of buying governments and entire police forces, leaving societies and governments defenseless, leaving defenseless families, and especially in the poorest countries. And a powerful country could have a strong judicial authority. They could have unbeatable police forces. But what about the poorest countries in our continent? And I'm talking about our countries in Latin America and the Caribbean. But what will happen in Africa or Asia or with many nations who don't have the economic power to tackle these criminals? The growing drug demand, let us understand this once and for all, it is giving criminals an economic power which in some cases is turning into political power. Now, furthermore, I would like to stress that all of this money awakens in them such ambition that they will sweep away any scruples, and they commit the worst atrocities and the worst acts of cruelty that humankind has seen. The money that comes from consumers is claiming the lives of thousands and thousands of young people in Latin America and in the Caribbean as a result of the violence associated with drug trafficking. And in particular, we nations are suffering the devastating effects of this situation more acutely, especially us, the nations who are between the production zone, for example, in the Andes in South America, and the largest consumption market in the world, which is the United States. And that includes Colombia, Venezuela, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, the Caribbean, Haiti, the Dominican Republic, Jamaica, all of them. And that is why, friends, I'd like to share with you that in December of last year, we met the heads of state of the zone, the heads of state and government of Central America, plus Mexico and Colombia, and we invited the president of Chile to what we called the Tuxtla consultation mechanism. And there we issued a very important declaration, the Mérida Declaration, and there we expressed the urgent need to achieve a significant reduction in the illegal drug demand from consuming countries. Yes, but we also said that if this is not possible, then the authorities of those countries must, therefore, for they have the moral obligation, to explore all alternatives to eliminate the exorbitant or stratospheric earnings of criminals, including exploring regulatory or market options which are directed to this end. Not only that, but months later, we all met, the countries of the continent met within the framework of the Sixth Summit of the Americas in Cartagena, Colombia, and there several leaders from Latin America reiterated our concern And we reached a central agreement from Canada to Chile to give a mandate to the OAS to analyze on the basis of scientific evidence today, to investigate all of the options that would allow us to combat this scourge more effectively. We also agreed unanimously on establishing a hemispheric arrangement against transnational organized crime, which would make it possible to coordinate in real time the different entities in charge of providing security in the hemisphere. Today, I am proposing formally that this organization, the United Nations, make a commitment to this area, that they carry out a far-reaching assessment of the progress and the limits of the current prohibitionist approach when it comes to drugs. This doesn't mean that we must let down our guard. We will not do so. Nor are we going to give an inch to criminal organizations. That we must let down our guard. We will not do so. Nor are we going to give an inch to criminal organizations. What it does mean is that countries must assume their common responsibility in this area, and which are also differentiated responsibilities in accordance with the origin and the ability that every country has. And in any case, regardless of the regulatory framework that will be developed when it comes to drugs, all nations, and I'm convinced, particularly the developing countries such as Mexico, we are called upon to implement a comprehensive policy along three lines. On the one hand, to combat crime, not to run away from crime, not to allow them to establish their territories if they were a state. Secondly, to strengthen laws and law enforcement agencies and institutions. And in particular, we have to clean up, we have to purge, and we have to strengthen police forces, prosecutors, public prosecutors, and judicial authorities. And thirdly, perhaps even more importantly, we have to restore the social fabric. We have to swiftly expand opportunities for young people, opportunities in the area of education, health, employment, and leisure. And we have to do it through universities, through musical groups, soccer teams, clinics, addiction prevention clinics. We have to set up active and massive prevention and treatment policies among young people. This is what we're already doing in Mexico. And we are doing this in our country along these three lines, which is crucial for any democratic state, regardless of its position or policy when it comes to fighting drugs. In any case, it's obvious that the state has to fight criminals. We have to have better law enforcement institutions, and we have to create opportunities. But today, I will call upon all nations here in the United Nations to assume this responsibility, a responsibility that we have not taken on, given the magnitude of the problem. The main cause of violent death in the world as a result of organized crime. And this is something the UN has to look at. If developed countries, the ones that consume tons and tons of drugs on a daily basis, if they cannot or do not want to reduce drug consumption, then at least they should stop the money that is being sent to criminals. At least they must stop the exorbitant flow of money with which criminals are financing themselves and claiming the lives of thousands of young people. And if they can't do this, it's the time to explore, I insist, the time to explore different alternatives when it comes to reducing consumption. And it's a time for the United Nations not only to take part in this analysis, the United Nations has to lead a far-reaching international debate, which would make it possible to take stock, on the one hand, of the progress and the limits of the current prohibitionist approach, which has led to the results we've achieved thus far, and they must also carry out a study on the inhuman violence, the unacceptable violence which is generated by the production, the distribution, and the trafficking of drugs in the world, and which has made, it's painful to say this, but it has made Latin America and the Caribbean the most violent region in the world. And this assessment must be done honestly and rigorously and with global responsibility. We have to explore those alternatives. We have to explore specifically regulatory or market alternatives, which make it possible if they can be alternatives, which would allow us all nations together to put an end to this scourge which is claiming thousands and thousands of lives in our region. As the United Nations studies and provides solutions to overcome global problems that threaten the integrity, the health, and the lives of millions of people, as it deals with starvation, as we should deal with starvation in the Horn of Africa, as we should deal with epidemics such as HIV, the H1N virus that affected Mexico, as we should deal with climate change, it is now time as well to enter into action to stop this wave of death which is causing so much suffering to our peoples. And I urge, I respectfully urge the United Nations to not only take part, but to lead a discussion which is up to the challenges of the 21st century and without any false prejudice, which would lead all of us to seek solutions to this very serious problem using new and effective approaches.
The president of Mexico, Felipe Calderón, speaking about the systematicity of oppression, death, expense, weapons, violation of law that is embedded in the complex of the drug war. Speaking today at the United Nations General Assembly, this is 5 o'clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. Also speaking today was the president of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, in what will have been his valedictory address as the president of Iran to the United Nations General Assembly. In today's speech, he said that he did welcome dialogue with the West. He said that his nation was under the threat of nuclear weapons possessed by Israel. He said that he still wanted dialogue despite the constant threats of invasion over the development of the Iranian nuclear power program. And he culminated his speech with a remarkable allusion to cross-cultural religious images of the arrival of a Messiah.
Mr. President, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, I thank the Almighty God for having once more the chance to participate in this meeting. We have gathered here to ponder and work together for building a better life for the entire human community and for our nations. Coming from Iran, the land of glory and beauty, the land of knowledge, culture, wisdom, and morality, the cradle of philosophy and mysticism, the land of compassion and light, the land of scientists, scholars, philosophers, masters of literature and writers, the land of Avicenna, Ferdowsi, Hafiz, Maulana, Attar, Khayyam, and Shahriyar. I represent a great and proud nation that is a founder of human civilization and an inheritor of respected universal values. I represent a conscious nation which is dedicated to the cause of freedom, peace, and compassion, a nation that has experienced the agony and bitter times of the aggressions and imposed wars, and profoundly values the blessings of peace and stability. I am now here for the eighth time in the eighth year of my service to my noble people in this august assembly of sisters and brothers from across the world to show to the world that my noble nation, like its brilliant past, has a global vision and welcomes any effort intended to provide and promote peace, stability, and tranquility, which can only be realized through harmony, cooperation, and joint management of the world. I am here to voice the divine and humanitarian message of learned men and women of my country to you and to the whole world. A message that Iran's great orator and poet Saadi presented to humanity in his eternal two-line poetry. Human beings are members of a whole in creation of one essence and soul. If one member is afflicted with pain, other members uneasy will remain. I have talked in the past 7 years about the current challenges, solutions, and prospects of the future world. And today I want to raise and discuss such issues from a different perspective. Thousands of years has passed since children of Adam, peace be upon him, started to settle down in various parts of earth. Peoples of different colors, inclinations, languages, customs, and traditions pursued persistently to fulfill their aspirations to build a noble society for a more beautiful life blessed with lasting peace, security, and happiness. Despite all efforts made by righteous people and justice seekers, and the sufferings and pains endured by masses of people in the quest to achieve happiness and victory, the history of mankind, except in rare cases, is marked with unfulfilled dreams and failures. Imagine for a moment, had there been no egoism, distrust, malicious behaviors, and dictatorships, with no one violating the rights of others. Had humanitarian values been viewed as the criterion for social dignity in place of affluence and consumerism, had humanity not experienced the dark age of medieval periods and centers of power not hindered the flourishing of knowledge and constructive thoughts, had the wars of crusade and the ensuing periods of slavery and colonialism not happened, and had the inheritors of these dark periods followed a course on the premises of humanitarian principles, had the First and Second World Wars in Europe, the wars in Korea, Vietnam, Africa, Latin America, and in the Balkans not happened, and if, instead of the occupation of Palestine, an imposition of a fake government, displacement, and genocide of millions of people around the globe, the truth behind these wars had been revealed based on justice, had Saddam Hussein not invaded Iran, and had the big powers supported the rights of Iranian people instead of siding with Saddam, if the tragic incident of September 11th and the military actions against Afghanistan and Iraq that left millions killed and homeless had not happened, and if instead of killing and throwing the culprit into the sea without trial or without informing the world and the people of America, an independent fact-finding team had been formed to make the general public aware of the truth behind the incident and prepare for bringing to justice the perpetrators, had extremism or terrorism not been used to secure political goals, had the arms been turned into pens and military expenditures been used to promote well-being and amity among nations, had the drum of ethnic, religious, or racial conflicts not been beaten, and if differences had not been used for the purpose of advancing political agendas, had the right to criticize the hegemonic policies and actions of the world Zionism been recognized to allow the world media to freely report and shed light on realities instead of taking deceitful gestures of backing freedom bent on offending the sanctities and most sacred beliefs of human beings and divine messengers who, as the purest and most compassionate human beings, are the gift of the Almighty to humanity, had the Security Council not been under the domination of a limited number of governments, thus disabling the United Nations to carry out its responsibilities on a just and equitable basis. If the international economic institutions had not been under pressure and were allowed to perform their duties and functions by using their expertise based on fairness and justice, had the world capitalists not weakened or victimized the economies of nations in order to make up for their own mistakes, if integrity and honesty had not prevailed on the international relations, and all nations and governments were treated equally and justly in the global efforts to build and expand happiness for the entire mankind, and if tens of other unfavorable situations had not occurred in human life, imagine how beautiful and pleasant our lives and how lovely the history of mankind would have been. Let us take a look at the world's situation today. A. The economic situation. Poverty is on the rise and the gap is widening between the rich and the poor. Total foreign debt of 18 million industrial countries has exceeded $60 trillion, whilst the repayment of half of this amount is sufficient to eradicate poverty in the world. Economies dependent on consumerism and exploitation of people only serve the interests of a limited number of countries. Creation of worthless paper assets by using influence and control over the world's economic centers constitutes the greatest abuse of history and is considered a major contributor to global economic crisis. It has been reported that only 33 trillion of paper assets were printed by one government alone. Development planning based on capitalist economy that runs in a vicious circle triggers unhealthy and devastating competitions, and it is a failed practice. B. The cultural situation. From the standpoint of the politicians who control the world power centers, concepts such as moral principles, purity, honesty, integrity, compassion, and self-sacrifice are rejected as defunct and outdated notions and an impediment to the accomplishment of their goals. They openly talk about their disbelief in the relevance of ethics to the political and social affairs. Pure and indigenous cultures, as the product of centuries-old efforts of nations, the common denominator reflecting human profound feeling and love towards beauties and the force which breeds diversity, cultural vividness, and social dynamism are under constant attacks and susceptible to extinction. A specific lifestyle, devoid of individual or social identity, is being imposed on nations by organized and systematic destruction and humiliation of identities. Family, as the noblest institution of societies and its center emanating love and humanity, has been seriously weakened and its destructive role is on the decline. Woman's sublime role and personality as a heavenly being, a manifestation of divine image and beauty, and the main pillar of every society, has been damaged and abused by the powerful and the wealthy. Human soul has become frustrated, and the essence of humankind humiliated and suppressed. C. Political and security situation. Unilateralism, application of double standards, and imposition of wars, instability and occupation to ensure economic interests and expand dominance over sensitive centers of the world have turned to be the order of the day. Arms race and intimidation by nuclear weapons and weapons of mass destruction by the hegemonic powers have become prevalent. Testing new generations of ultra-modern weaponry and the pledge to disclose these armaments on due time is now being used as a new language of threat against nations to coerce them into accepting a new era of hegemony. Continued threat by the uncivilized Zionists to resort to military action against our great nation is a clear example of this bitter reality. A state of mistrust has cast its shadow on the international relations, whilst there is no trusted or just authority to help resolve world conflicts. No one feels secure or safe, even those who have stockpiled thousands of atomic bombs and other arms in their arsenals. the environmental situation, the environment as a commonwealth and heritage of the entire humankind, and a constant guarantor of man's survival, has been seriously damaged and devastated as a result of irresponsible and excessive use of resources, particularly by capitalists across the world, a situation that has caused massive drought, flood, and pollutions, inflicting irreparable damage and jeopardizing seriously human life on Earth. Dear colleagues, despite advances in scientific knowledge and technology, the aspirations of Adam's children have not yet been fulfilled. Does anybody believe that continuation of the current order is capable of bringing happiness for human society? Today, everyone is discontent and disappointed with the current international order. Dear colleagues, human beings do not deserve to be under continued sufferings of the present situation. God of wisdom and compassion, who loves all human beings, has not ordained such a destiny for mankind. He has ordered human, as the supreme creature, to make the best and most beautiful life on earth, along with justice, love, and dignity. We must therefore think of a solution. Who is responsible for all these sufferings and failures? Some people try to justify that everything is normal and a reflection of divine will, putting the blame on nations as responsible for all prevalent vices and evils. They are of the opinion that it is the nations that succumb to discrimination and tyranny. It is the nation that surrender to dictatorship and greed. It is the nations that accept the hegemony of arrogant and expansionist powers. It is the nations that are influenced by the propaganda tactics of powers, and most all vices in our world are the result of their passive attitudes with the inclination to live under the supremacy of the world powers. These are the arguments raised by those who tend to blame nations for the unfavorable conditions prevailing in the world with the intention to justify the attitudes and destructive behaviors of the ruling minority. These claims, supposedly authentic, cannot in any way justify continuation of the present oppressive international order. Indeed, poverty is imposed on nations, and powers' ambitions and goals are pursued either through deceit or resort to force. To justify their inhuman actions, they propagate the theory based on the survival of the fittest. While in principle, most governments and nations of justice-seeking people are humble and submissive in the face of right and are after fostering dignity, prosperity, and constructive interactions, masses of people never want to expand their territories, nor do they seek to obtain legendary wealth. They have no disputes among themselves in principles and have never played any role in the creation of any disastrous events in the course of history. I do not believe that Muslims, Christians, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, and others have any problems among themselves or are hostile against each other. They get along together comfortably and live together in an atmosphere of peace and amity. They are all devoted to the cause of justice, purity, and love. The general tendency of nations has always been to accomplish positive common aspirations, reflecting exalted divine and human beauties and nobilities. The current abysmal situation of the world and the bitter incidents of history are due mainly to the wrong management of the world and the self-proclaimed centers of power who have entrusted themselves to the devil. The order that is rooted in the anti-human thoughts of slavery and the old and new colonialism are responsible for poverty, corruption, ignorance and oppression and discrimination in every corner of the world. The current world order has certain characteristics, some of which are as follows. It is founded on materialism, and that is why it is in no way bound to moral values. It has been shaped according to selfishness, deception, hatred, and animosity. It believes in classification of human beings, humiliation of other nations, trampling upon the rights of others and their domination. It seeks to expand its domination by spreading discord and conflicts amongst ethnic groups and nations. It aims to monopolize power, wealth, science, and technology for a limited group. Policies of the world's main centers of powers are based on the principle of domination and the conquering of others. These centers only seek supremacy and are not in favor of peace, and definitely not at the service of their nations. Are we to believe that those who spend hundreds of millions of dollars on election campaigns have the interests of the people of the world at their hearts? Despite what big political parties claim in the capitalist countries, the money that goes into election campaigns is usually nothing but an investment. In such countries, people have to vote for parties that only represent a small number of people. The will and views of the masses have the least impact and influence on the big decisions, especially those made about the major domestic and foreign policies in the United States and in Europe. Their voices are not heard, even if they constitute 99% of their societies. Human and ethical values are sacrificed in order to win votes, and the willingness to listen to the demands of the people has become only a tool at the time of election. The current world order is discriminatory and based on injustice. Distinguished friends and colleagues, what should be done and what is the way out of the current situation? There is no doubt that the world is in need of a new order and a fresh way of thinking, an order in which man is recognized as God's supreme creature, enjoying material and spiritual qualities, and possessing a pure and divine nature filled with a desire to seek justice and truth. An order that aims to revive human dignity and believes in universal happiness and perfection. 3. An order which is after peace, lasting security and welfare for all walks of life around the globe. 4. An order that is founded upon trust and kindness and brings thoughts, hearts, and hands closer to each other's. Rulers must love people. 5. A just and fair order in which everybody is equal before law and in which there is no double standard. Leaders of the world must regard themselves as committed servants of the people, not their superiors. 7. Authority is a sacred gift from people to their rulers, not a chance to amass power and wealth. Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, is it possible to have such an order without having everybody's contribution to the way the world is run? It is abundantly evident that when all the people and government start to think and commit themselves to the above-mentioned principles and become sensitive to the internationally important issues and participate in decision makings, their wishes will find a chance to be materialized. By raising collective awareness, the seeking of a joint global management becomes more vivid, with the chances of its implementation increase. Today is the day of nations, and their wants will determine the future of the world. Therefore, together, we need to place our trust in God Almighty and stand against the acquisitive minority with all our might, so that they become isolated and can no longer decide the destiny of other nations. 2. Believe in the God's bounty of blessing and mercy, and seek it in the integration and unity of human societies. Governments emerging from the free will of nations must believe in their own ceaseless capabilities and know that they can achieve victory if they vigorously fight the unjust order and defend human rights. 3. Pave the ground for the joint global management by insisting upon justice in all its aspects, strengthen unity, friendship, and expand economic, social, cultural, and political interactions in independent and specialized organizations. 4. Care about the interests of all the people of the world and join hands to reform the current structures of the United Nations with our joint efforts and coordination. It is necessary to know that the United Nations belongs to all nations. Thus, the existence of discrimination amongst the members is a great insult to all. The existence of discrimination and monopoly in the United Nations is in no way acceptable. 5. Have more coordinated efforts to generate and propagate and firmly establish the language needed for designing the required structures of the joint global management filled with justice, love, freedom, and amity. Participation in global management is the basis of lasting peace. The non-aligned movement, as the second largest trans-regional group after the United Nations, held its 16th summit in Tehran with the motto of joint global management, cognizant of the importance of this issue and the shortcomings of the current mismanagements in the emergence of crises and problems afflicting the world today. During the summit, participating heads of state and representatives of more than 120 countries underscored the necessity of a more serious and effective participation of all nations in the global management. Fortunately, we are now at a historic juncture. On one hand, Marxism is no longer around and is particularly eliminated from the management systems. And on the other, capitalism is bogged down in a self-made quagmire, and it has indeed reached a deadlock and does not seem to be able to come up with any noteworthy solution to the various economic, political, security, and cultural problems of the world. Non-aligned movement is proud to once again emphasize the rightfulness of its historic decision to reject the poles of power and the unbridled hegemony ruling the world. On behalf of the members of the Non-Aligned Movement, I would like to invite all countries of the world to play a more active role in making it possible for everybody to contribute to the global decision-making processes in the world. The need to remove the structural barriers and encourage the process of universal participation in global management has never been greater. Before, the United Nations lacks the efficiency to bring about the required changes. If this inefficiency persists, nations will lose hope in the global structures to defend their rights. If the United Nations is restructured, international interactions and the spirit of collective global cooperation will be tarnished, and the standing of the United Nations will be damaged. The United Nations has been created with the purpose of expanding justice, and reinstitution of the universal rights has in practice been engulfed by discrimination, preparing a supportive ground for the domination of a few powerful countries. Consequently, UN's inefficiency has been on the rise. Moreover, the existence of the veto right and monopolization of power in the Security Council have made it nearly impossible to defend the rights of the nations. The issue of the UN restructuring is very vital and is a need that has been emphasized time and again by the representatives of nations, a goal that has not yet been accomplished. I would like to urge the honorable members of the United Nations and His Excellency the Secretary General and his colleagues to place this issue high on their agendas and devise an appropriate mechanism to make it happen. Non-aligned movement stands ready to aid the United Nations in this essential endeavor. Mr. President, friends and dear colleagues, creating peace and lasting security with decent life for all, although a great and historic mission, can be accomplished. The Almighty God has not left us alone in this mission and has said that it will surely happen. If it doesn't happen, then it will be contradictory to His wisdom. God has promised us a man of kindness, a man who loves people and loves absolute justice, a man who is a perfect human being and is named Imam al-Mahdi, a man who will come in the company of Jesus Christ and the righteous. By using the inherent potential of all the worthy men and women of all nations, and I repeat, the inherent potential of all the worthy men and women of all nations, he will lead humanity into achieving its glorious and eternal ideals. The arrival of the ultimate Savior will mark a new beginning, a rebirth, and a resurrection. It will be the beginning of peace, lasting security, and genuine life. His arrival will be the end of oppression, immorality, poverty, discrimination, and the beginning of justice, love, and empathy. He will come and he will cut through ignorance, superstition, prejudice by opening the gates of science and knowledge. He will establish a world brimful of prudence, and he will prepare the ground for the collective, active, and constructive participation of all in the global management. He will come to grant kindness, hope, freedom, and dignity to all humanity as a gift. He will come so mankind will taste the pleasure of being human and being in the company of other humans. He will come so that hands will be joined, hearts will be filled with love, and thoughts will be purified to be at the service of security, welfare, happiness, well-being, and peace for all. He will come to return all children of Adam, irrespective of their skin colors, to their innate origin after a long history of separation and division, linking them to eternal happiness and joy. The arrival of the ultimate Savior, Jesus Christ, and the righteous will bring about an eternally bright future for mankind, not by force or waging wars, but through thought, awakening, and developing kindness in everyone. Their arrival will breed a new life in the cold and frozen hearts and body of the world. He will bless humanity with a spring that puts an end to our winter of ignorance, poverty, and war. With the tidings of a season of blooming, he puts an end to the winter of ignorance for humanity. Now we can see and we can sense the sweet scent and the soulful breeze of the spring, a spring that has just begun and doesn't belong to a specific race, ethnicity, nation, or a region, a spring that will soon reach all the territories in Asia, Europe, Africa, and America. He will be the spring of all, the justice seekers, freedom lovers, and the followers of heavenly prophets. He will be the spring of humanity and the greenery of all ages. Let us join hands and clear the way for his eventual arrival with empathy and cooperation, in harmony and unity. Let us march on this path to salvation for the thirsty souls of humanity to taste immortal joy and grace. Long live this spring. Long live this spring. And again, long live this spring.
The final address of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in his capacity as the president of Iran, speaking earlier today, to the United Nations General Assembly. And that concludes today's edition of 5 O'Clock Shadow, produced by Thiago Barroso and engineered by Michael G. Haskins. We welcome your communications with an email to theshadow@wbai.org. And for 5 O'Clock Shadow, I'm Robert Knight in New York.